Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this audiocast number 6, we are going to talk to comedy writing legend Tom Leopold, who is going to tell us about the serious side of making people laugh. So all you got to do is sit back and...
1, 2, 3, listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
I'm so excited to be here with you this week on another special Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo. And this week, I reconnect with good friend and former co-host to my SiriusXM 129 radio show, Entertaining Truth. I'll be interviewing comedy writing legend Tom Leopold. He's written for shows like Cheers and Seinfeld and Will and Grace. He's written for Ellen DeGeneres. He's written for The Vice President. And he shows to me that there is a serious side of comedy. And, you know, I know a couple really, really funny people in my life, and many of them are priests. And one of them just reminded me of how awkward it is when someone knows that they are funny. They'll say, "Hey, I heard you're funny. Say something funny." You know, you just get put on the spot as the one person who has the responsibility to bring laughter and joy in this world. In a room, really, filled with a bunch of strangers watching you with a spotlight. How awkward is that? Well, it just got me thinking of what does it take to bring good news, to bring joy, to bring laughter, to just bring a sense of funny to this world, which is kind of miserable. So anyway, I just want to start this little appetizer, this amuse-bouche, by quoting a few people who are great comedy writers. There's one guy here, Dimitri Martin. He writes this: "I like video games, but they're really violent. I'd like to play a video game where you help people who were shot in all the other games. It'd be called Really Busy Hospital." I like this guy. It's true. And you know what? If they need a chaplain, I will be there. Anyway, there's another one, Peter Cameron, who writes this: "I hate stand-up comics. I think funny is something you are, not something you desperately try to be in front of a room full of obnoxious people." Wow, you know, we're getting literally to the heart of why people have a sense of humor and how do they use that sense of humor to bring, like I said, good news into this world. And a final one, Lori Moore writes this: "Nothing is a joke with me. It just all comes out like one." I love that. You know, oftentimes we think of a comedian and we forget that while they bring us joy, they can have some serious stuff going on in their life, which is why interviewing Tom Leopold is going to be a pleasure for you all today. It's going to be a chance for you to hear what it's like for a Jewish comedy writer making it big in the entertainment industry and then having everything come crashing down because of an eating disorder. And I'll explain that to you in the interview. But then, on top of this horrific experience and just struggle and turmoil in his family, God comes knocking on his door and says, "Knock, knock." Tom says, "Who's there?" Well, guess what? All you've got to do now is just listen to this deep dish discussion when we come back for more Shoot the Shiitake with Tom Leopold, interviewed by me, Father Leo. We'll be back in just a minute. There are still a few spots left for my Holy Land and Jordan trip. It's going to be an amazing opportunity, leaving June 17th and returning on June 28th, 2018. There you will experience the Bible come to life in an intimate group setting with some of the best travel experiences ever, with great guides, world-class hotels, and then, of course, amazing food, because I'll be leading this trip. You're going to not only see, but taste the goodness of the Lord. So for more information, go to my website at fatherleofeeds.com/travel or visit Select International, and you can call them at 800-842-4842. That's 800-842-4842, and we'll see you in the Holy Land. Welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. I am not only with good friend, but comedy legend, really. His name is Tom Leopold of TomLeopold.net.
That's gone. I don't even have that anymore.
You don't even have that. What do you have?
I've been kicked out of .net. I didn't go to enough of the meetings and the parties and stuff.
Tom Leopold was my co-host for a SiriusXM's radio show called Entertaining Truth. But more importantly, Tom Leopold has been... a comedian for many, many years. And I don't, that's not saying how old you are.
Let's not get ugly. Actually, I'm a comedy writer. I'm not really a comedian.
Oh, but okay.
But I have been performed a lot on different things I've written.
Exactly. And so you've been a comedy writer for hit shows, Cheers, Seinfeld, Will and Grace, and then even writing for Ellen DeGeneres and a whole bunch of other people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Who wrote for the vice president.
I
flew around on Air Force Two.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, you're pretty fancy.
I hope your public isn't too liberal. You have to cut this out.
Which is a great thing to ask you right off the bat. First of all, how did you get started in comedy? And everybody always asks that question, I realize.
Well, it started with my dad undermining my confidence. Like it always starts for every funny person. Not really, my dad. Well, my dad was...
But so humor was just part of your family?
Well, my father was very funny. I mean, for real funny, not just a funny dad.
But did he make a profession out of it?
No, he was a salesman. He became very successful and created a kind of dress that became very popular called the shirt shift dress. And then
the shirt shift dress?
Yeah, it was like a man's Oxford button-down shirt, but as a dress for women. It was the first one of its kind.
Oh, my gosh.
And he started as a traveling salesman through different little shops in the South. I grew up in Miami, and he always have a joke, but he was a genuinely funny guy. And I think I really got my living from just hearing him do shtick around the house.
Is everyone else in your family funny, too?
My older brother was funny, but not me. I think I got the gift from my dad.
And that's just to perform, because being funny is one thing, but you put that funny person in front of a crowd, and that's a different story, because you actually did do some stand-up,
well,
right?
Well, no, I never really did stand-up. You got to do your research, Leo. How dare you bring me in this radio show? No, I did a little bit, but I did mostly comedy. I started as an actor.
Okay, but sketch comedy as well.
Sketch comedy, yep. And on Broadway, off-Broadway, regional
theater. And I think
that's
my confusion, because I thought that that's all the same thing.
No, stand-up is like going into a nightclub and, doing 20 minutes and so
sure.
on. And I did a little of that. Just enough to realize I could probably do it, but I don't know if I can take the lifestyle.
Okay.
You know.
But your lifestyle is very different as a comedy writer.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
a lot of your work is behind a desk, talking to a team of people.
Right. And just sitting in front of the computer,
When did you know you made it big? And what was that first big thing?
This interview. Now, I know that sounds like just kissing up.
Kissing down, because I'm shorter
kissing
than you.
Down. Gee, you know what? I only feel that recently in my dotage here at my mid to late 60s. Don't tell anybody. Where I realize I look back and I go, wow, maybe that was a career. You know, as you're doing it.
When did you think that you wanted to make it a career? I mean, at what age were you say, I want to be a comedy writer? Because, again, for me, you can get confused with comedian.
Well, at age 7, I knew I wanted to be in show business.
Get out.
Yes. Oh, I desperately wanted it from that age. I don't really know what it's like not to know what you want to do from the beginning.
Wow.
Which is, I kind of like wish I had had a little bit of that experience, but...
Like, when 7 years old, did you make everyone sit down and be like, now, ladies and gentlemen, or were you like, Dad, let me write these lines for you and your customer?
You've been a wonderful family, ladies and gentlemen. Tip your waitresses. No, I was, it's weird, because I was very sickly, asthmatic, and always sick, but in my head, I was I was Jack Lemmon. I was a seven-year-old Jack Lemmon. I knew I desperately wanted to get into show business, and the only show thing I could think to be was an actor. Like, I wanted to be a light comic actor.
Can you write well, or is it, does it come across differently when you're writing comedy? Because you're writing lines for people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but are you a good writer? Would you call yourself a good writer?
Yeah, I've published a few novels that got, you know, didn't sell, but or didn't sell much, but got well reviewed. I mean, I didn't really think of myself as a real writer till I... Well, I started publishing stuff in the, when I was 20 in the National Lampoon magazine and Radio Hour, which was a big deal at the time. It was kind of like The Onion. But it was, you know, and, on, and there I met, worked with Bill Murray and Chevy Chase and
the original sketch comedians that made it really big.
Yes. I always say I've known more people that got famous than anyone else. I always say I'm not near great, I'm just near the greats.
Oh, you know,
that's been my... I've known really... So all those guys I worked with...
They're
all
big names.
On.
They're huge
names. But I was an actor, so I'd be off doing summer stock or regional theater, and I'd be sending in these things to the magazine, getting my stuff published and bits on the radio. And I would be on the radio when I was there doing my own comic stuff. But I tell you, I hadn't never read much. I wasn't much of a reader.
Really? And so you've never read my books?
No, I can't get through them. They're so dense. No, I of course I've read your books.
Yeah, right.
Father Lee.
And he lies to a priest in his face, recorded for everyone to hear.
Well, it's at least
so, but
in
you're,
my
you're
sins.
Not a, you're not a big right reader,
well,
but
I mean,
you are.
I mean, I thought, as a writer, I thought, well, if I just do it the way I talk, I could be a writer.
Okay.
You know, because I read, as I started writing, at least when I started to write novels, I thought, I don't know how to write a novel. I 2 pages a day. Then in 30 days, I'll have 60 pages. But I thought, in fact, I liked how I talked.
Okay.
And so I put everything in the first person, and I wasn't intimidated by it in that way.
And how do you get a job as a comedy writer then?
Well, it came from the Lampoon, starting out there. And I did a lot of things. And then the acting sort of left, I sort of left that behind as the writing became more and more, and I was so much more comfortable as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't rely on what face expression I made.
Sure.
That might have been okay. And I thought, wow, this would be great. I could just do something where I slide it under the door, and they can have it, but it isn't me. You know, it's separate from me. And when that happened, I thought, oh, yeah, this is where I belong, because I was always much more talented backstage.
Really?
I was okay as an actor. I did Gunsmoke and Manic.
Sure.
I made a living at it from the beginning. I always felt, now this I can do. This isn't, I was okay, but I thought, what am I going to be, Uncle Jim on the Waltons when I'm 50?
So you never personally were jealous of these writers who were these comedians and actors who were using your material. You don't ever feel jealous.
No, I don't think so. I thought, the high of hearing somebody kill with one of my lines.
Yeah.
It's just...
By the way, for pious people, when he says kill, it not mean like, you know, thou shalt not kill. He's talking about, like, really kill it. Like, the joke blasted people out of their seats and they're funny. And
yeah. I mean, at some comedy stores, it said, thou shalt kill.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not the kind from the bad killing.
So for my pious listeners...
Yes, just to put that straight. I mean, to hear a great comic... I mean, I've written for Bob Hope. I've written for
Amazing.
Carol Burnett.
Exactly.
I've written for...
But you're naming people that some of our listeners may not even know about.
Right.
And I do want to ask you about, first of all, what you think about comedy today. But before we get to that, I want to just ask about the process. Say, for example, Seinfeld, which is still kind of syndicated. People know
that
well. I mean, you wrote for Will and Grace. They made a comeback. And,
Cheers. My favorite job was Cheers.
Cheers was your favorite job.
Yeah.
How many comedy writers are writing for that show?
Well, you have to do about 28 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a room, we call it the room, where, you know, the cage, they put the writers, you know.
Yep.
And it's like about, they throw meat at us, and, you know. But there'd be about 11 people.
11
Because
writers.
You had to be 3 episodes ahead.
Yep.
You had to rewrite the episode you're working on that week. And you had to edit the episodes
That wasn't usually my job. So is it one writer per episode?
Well, one writer will originate a script. Like, he'll originate it, and then everybody will go to rehearsals, hear what stinks, go back, and everybody will pitch jokes on it.
Unbelievable.
So when it says written by Tom Leopold, it means that I originated it, but just like I put my jokes on everybody else's episodes, they put some of their jokes on my episode. In terms of sitcom, anyway.
Okay, so let's pick an episode of, say, Cheers. What one that people can kind of Google and search out and say, man, I just heard that guy get interviewed.
Gee.
Or even Seinfeld.
Well, Seinfeld, I've written some of the ones people seem to like the most. I created the character Babu Box, the cafe guy. You bad man, Jerry. Jerry ruins his little cafe, you know. And that's one people. I wrote the first one of those called The Cafe, where George has Elaine take his IQ test for him. And these are two stories based on my life.
Now, that's the funny part.
Yeah.
I do want to ask about where you get your inspiration from, because I know a lot of people just kind of ask that same question. But what inspires you to be funny? I mean, especially if you're having a bad day.
Yeah.
Do you even have bad days?
I'm having one right now. No offense, but it's always a bad day. No, I can't. No, I'm having a great day. It's amazing, really. I mean, I tell you, I was just telling somebody this story that... Should I keep hitting the table like this? Does that bother anyone?
It's me.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure.
Everyone honestly thinks that it's caused a few people to have heart attacks.
Some people enjoy that. I don't know. When day of my dad's funeral, I had to go back, and there was a deadline on a sitcom I was writing.
You're kidding.
And I went up in my dad's mom's bedroom and wrote these jokes, and it came. It was fine. I mean... So, thank God, let me cross myself, Father Leo. It just kind of is there and kind of always saves me, you know. I've never had writer's block. Now, having said that, of course, I will have
writer's
block.
Yeah, exactly. Knock on wood,
but not
hard.
But I've never had that, you know. I always say, when I have writer's block, all I have to do is look at my bills. And it goes right away, you know.
There is a serious side of comedy, and I think in this day and age... Are you doing okay there? You're sitting here. Do you need a high chair?
My underpants are riding up, if you must know. Okay, now I'm fine.
Boy, I thought they made those.
This is the Wedgie
much
News Report.
Exactly.
Yes, I'm fine. Can you hear me okay? I don't
Folks,
know how close
this was
to sit.
Exactly what it was like when
two
I
two years.
No,
this.
You were great. Is it 2 years? Was it two?
Didn't we do 2 years?
I thought it was three, maybe. Maybe I don't know.
Oh,
maybe
I
that was wishful thinking on my part. You know,
felt like four. No, it was great.
There is a serious side of comedy, and we're going to jump into that right now because obviously people know you are funny. They know you're talented if you're going to be writing for these things. You did make it big, but there is a – what would you say would be – people need to take seriously if they're going to be going into a world in an industry like this? The entertainment industry, for lack of a better term, you know?
Yeah.
What are the
It's not entertaining to the people who are in it.
No, not at all. So what's the serious side of you and of this business?
Well, I always say – even though I've been very lucky, you know, and had a good career, I'd say I always joke that 94% of it was stressful and hard, but that other 4%, man, that was a gas.
That's so
and
that, strange
that's worth
to
it.
Hear.
Well, I wouldn't say those are the exact percentages, but
because you're not good at math.
No, I'm not. I'm dyslexic, so maybe it was 97%. No, that's a exaggeration.
Sure.
But so. Even if you're successful, so much of it is, oh, will I ever get a job again?
Did that lead you to make compromises so that you could just make a paycheck? Because we know a lot of people in the industry who do make compromises all the time with their moral life and just with everything.
I don't think I've ever made it. I mean, I've sold out the minute there was an offer. I mean, I'm all for selling out. But never morally. It was never morally like, oh, I won't do this against my morals, except for one job.
Uh-oh. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I got a job to write a show called Heil Honey, I'm Home. I swear. It was in London, and Barbara and I had just been married, and we didn't have kids yet, and it's going to be a bunch of episodes in London, and I always wanted to work in London. I ended up working in London quite a lot, but this is great, and it was a sitcom about Hitler and Eva Braun.
Oh, my gosh.
And one episode would be like, the Himmlers are coming for dinner. You know, the Goerings are coming for dinner. I swear, this is true. And I thought, hey, London, this is going to be great. And then one night, in the middle of the night, I wake up in like a sweat. And I go, what the hell am I doing? I can't do this. I mean, I was Jewish at the time. I still feel Jewish, although I'm Catholic, too.
But we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, okay, I figured you would. But I thought, even if I wasn't, I thought, God, what am I thinking? I can't do this. And humanize Nazi Hitler and make him funny. And I'm glad, and I had trouble getting out of the job. You know, I said, I feel terrible. I don't know why I took it. I just can't do it. But that's the only moral thing. I mean, mostly, I was just so happy to get a job.
How did you keep your morals then? I mean, you're working with people who have obviously made it so big that the world was at their feet.
Yeah, I've worked with a lot of celebrities.
And with that comes, obviously, a lot of issues.
Button? Where's the cough button?
There's no cough
There's
button.
There's no cough button.
You just put your hand in your in your elbow.
In your sleeve.
That's right.
Right.
No, but that whole world is, you know, dangerous. It's frightening. There's a lot of drugs, sex, rock and roll.
Well, I did my share of all that. As I was, I dated a string of the most beautiful women. And I did a lot. I did my share of drugs, Father Leo. And this is all before I met my BM, my beautiful mate, Barbara. We've been married 30 years. You know.
Married 30 years. How many children do you have?
Two. Two wonderful girls.
Two wonderful girls. Mm-hmm. Married 30 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had our 30th in October.
That is amazing.
Thanks for the gift, by the way.
You're welcome.
Okay.
It's coming. It's my
it's
book.
It's coming? Okay.
It's
you have a year. Okay. Yeah, good. Oh, good. I'll take the book.
And you, and yet you were able to kind of make it through slightly unscathed. What was the morals that you were instilled with then to kind of get you through it all? Or was it just dumb luck?
Well, a lot of it was luck because I partied a little too hard. Thank God I wasn't nothing permanently injured. But I always say that because I'm not proud of it. But hey, it was like
it's just part of life.
You go to parties and it was I thought it was fun at the time.
Okay, can I ask you what would be as you're performing, because you also now have
I perform too.
You have a performance called A Comedy Writer Finds God.
Yeah, I do it all over the place.
Tell me about that, because you touched on you not being Jewish, at least, affiliated to the Jewish, but you are Jewish.
Well, I was,
but you're now Catholic.
Born Jewish, and
there's
I
a lot
feel
going
very
on here.
You don't get this funny not being Jewish. I always say
I agree.
You know? And about 8 years ago now, my daughter, Gussie, she was suffering from a terrible eating disorder and lots of hospitals and all this and different therapies. And it was a really rough, rough time.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very scary. Are we on?
We're good. Yeah. It's recording.
Should we start recording now? When are we going to start doing the show? Oh, it's already on. See how I have to make a joke because it's painful?
No.
That's another thing about writing.
What?
Well, I mean, I just made a joke about are we on?
Yeah.
But it's because I'm talking. I mean, I make jokes anyway. But,
yeah.
But
it's because you saw me check the time clock.
Yeah, but I had to go right out of that painful thought.
Wow.
Just
so, humor is almost in a way a type of medication for
It's
people.
A medication. It's a defense. It's fun.
It's a default in a way, too.
Yes.
So if you're feeling pain, you just kind of go.
Which is a very Jewish thing, by the way.
Oh, my God.
A Jewish sense
and
of humor.
Catholic, for
and
God's
Catholic.
Sake. Yeah.
And, Italians, everybody has.
But you were talking about just how your daughter has.
Yeah, my
had
daughter became very
disorder.
Ill.
Uh-huh.
Our daughter, Barbara and I, and we thought there was lots of dangerous, terrible times. And we had her in yet another hospital out in Arizona. It was supposed to be a great hospital. It turned out it was good. And we didn't get to see her for months because that's how bad a shape she was in. And,
yikes.
And that was how their therapy worked. So,
how old was she at the time that you diagnosed this?
14 or 15.
Jeez,
16
whiz,
maybe.
Huh?
No, 15 at the oldest.
That's very challenging
to
see your 15-year-old daughter for a couple months, eating disorder. And then you finally get a chance to see her, and then what happens?
Well, it was Christmas Eve, and we're at this dude ranch motel.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara and I and our oldest girl, Olivia, who's the great sister and daughter. And imagine how depressing that was. We're decorating our little motel. It's a Western theme.
Oh.
And we're decorating this Christmas Eve with stuff we bought at the dollar store in Wickenburg, Arizona. The Tiffany's of Wickenburg.
Sure.
Yeah, the dollar store. And it was pretty sad. And that night, it was the first time I always have a joke. We went to bed early. We flipped a coin. Barbara won the toss, so I had to sleep in the upper bunk. But that night was the very, very first night I ever really, really prayed for real.
Wow.
For real.
Mm-hmm.
And next morning I woke up. I didn't know how to pray, so I was praying like I saw people pray on television, you know, like on wagon trains and stuff. You know?
The Waltons.
And I thought, I can't pray like Ward Bond or the Waltons. I got to pray like for me, really, because everything I know, I only know from television and TV and movies.
Yeah.
And I said, Lord, if you're really up there, you got to help me. I can't make it alone. I'll never forget it. Next morning, Barbara and I, it's Christmas morning. We both got up at like dawn, and we walking out in the desert, which is the first time I've ever been in the desert. Mm-hmm. I've been to Vegas, but it doesn't really count. But Barbara and I are walking around, and all of it's empty for miles. All of a sudden, we see this little puff of dust, and a guy, an old guy, like Clint Eastwood, like old tough guy, like ex-Marine, like in his 70s, comes up on a motorcycle out of nowhere. He had deer antlers for handlebars.
Oh, my gosh.
And he comes
up. Did he have a red nose on it, too?
No, I don't know. Well, he had a red nose.
Okay.
I don't think it was from that. He was a really cool guy, and he starts talking. He pulls, like, does a wheelie in front of us.
What?
And he starts talking, like, to us in a monologue, like he had just been talking to us already.
Yeah.
And he starts saying, when he was 33, his wife brought him to Jesus at 33. His name was, her main name was Shepherd. And the phone rings, and it's Gussie, because the two girls were going to ride horses that day. It's mm-hmm. the only day we could have Gussie. He says, hang up, she's fine.
What?
He didn't know who it was.
This is weird.
Oh, yeah. Have I told you ever this
story? You have told me this story, but our listeners haven't. But even hearing it again, you pick up these nuances.
Well, that's not even all of it. I'm just kind of pushing through it a little bit because it's so many details, it sounds unbelievable. It sounds even more unbelievable. And then he looks at me, and all the time he's saying these things to me, he's going, you know what I'm talking about. He's looking right at me.
And he's pointing
at you.
You know
what I'm talking about. Yeah. And
are you getting offended, or are you getting weird here?
Well, it's not like you can pick a fight with him. Yeah, I mean, I figure I know a lot of these guys in New York City walking around.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was, but the way he had this, he did have this magnetism and this charisma and stuff.
Huh.
And he says, you know what I'm talking about. And the fact is, I thought it was just, you know, a reaction from the Ambien. You know, you know, on the bottle it says you could wake up with a cake in your bed in Spain, or you could see some old guy in the desert. You know, these reactions you can get. And he says, you know what I'm talking about. And then he goes on for more things like that. And then he peels off, and he comes back, and he looks at me again. Barbara was right there. And he says, God is watching you. And goes off into the sun, because the sun's coming up. Right, like drives right up into it. I mean, and we just stood there for a while. And I didn't even associate it with having prayed that night.
Wow.
And then a bunch of other things happened. And one of them was meeting Father Jonathan Morris, who, of course, you know.
Which we're going to hear about when we come back from a little break. Because this is kind of riveting. There is a very serious side of you. And honestly, I think that's what makes you worth listening to. I think comedians can make you laugh all day long, but you don't remember what they actually said. And I think that's one of the reasons why you, as a entertainer, as a comedy writer, there's a depth to you that I think a lot of comedians don't have. And I'm going to compliment you at least on air. And then when I hit the pause
button, I'll insult
you.
I hope so.
But when we come right back, we're going to hear more about comedy writing legend, but he's not like dead or anything. He's still working his butt off,
yeah,
and that's the amazing part.
Job, yeah.
Tom Leopold with more Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. You like that title, huh? If you are in the Ohio region near North Olmsted, you can come to a Feed My Faith event with me. There are 2 days in May 23rd and May 24th where I'll be speaking and cooking. There you can hear the message that has fed people body, mind, and soul around the world, but coming to you in North Olmsted. And you can get your tickets for the Feed My Faith event at shop.fatherleofeeds.com. That's shop.fatherleofeeds.com for your tickets, and I will see you in Ohio. Welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake. I am back with Tom Leopold. Obviously, Tom, you have a very serious side to life, but you're still so darn funny. In the break, you had me just basically in stitches, you know, because that's just...
I'm great in the break.
Yeah.
It's kind of a... A mixed blessing, though.
Yeah, I just throw something out there, and your mind goes immediately towards, like, funny.
Well, that's important in my line of work, Leo.
But there's also some very serious sides to you, and obviously when you talk to your family, when you're talking to your family, you just told us a story about meeting this guy, you know, Shepherd on the bike. Now, why
on a motorcycle with the deer antlers for handlebars.
Exactly.
Yeah, and should I recap?
No.
For the people just coming into the theater?
No, I think they've got that.
Okay.
But then you make a tremendous leap from there, thinking that obviously God is going to be taking care of, you know, your family. But what did you think when this guy comes up to you and says this?
Well, I felt a few things. One was, it was too good to believe in a way. There was not only that, but he talked about how he was a caretaker for the compound up in Hyannisport for the Kennedys. I mean, he was everything. He organized the
And
first...
you didn't think he was crazy? You didn't think that he was just a patient that was just getting discharged or anything?
Well, I thought at first, like I said, you know, I've seen a lot of those, you know, kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just too hip and charismatic and telling this stuff about Jesus, you know, and his... these things, like, anyway, so he came, his wife brought him to Jesus at 33, I know I said that, but, and her maiden name was Shepherd, and he got into this whole long story, how his first wife couldn't have a baby, and so his father-in-law back in, he was 78 or something, it paid him to have a baby with her because he knew the baby would live, but she could have a baby, but she would die, and so, and all this kind of stuff. That, I believe, too. But it was kind of profound. It felt like, I felt like, like, this is great.
But then what happens next?
This is supernatural.
You know, your wife, Barbara, she's like, okay, this guy's a kook. She was pretty impressed with this guy,
yeah,
too.
You know, Barbara doesn't get impressed by anything. It's 30 years. I'm still trying to get impress her.
She still barely pays attention to you.
Exactly.
And then you were. I remember you telling me a story about a hot air balloon, and I'm not quite sure exactly how that fit in.
Tell me
about this.
So anyway, that's what happened Christmas Day, right? And we only had Gussie. We could have her for another for Christmas Day.
Yeah.
So the girls rode their horses around, and then we took her just for a drive to get her, you know. But, of course, it's the desert, so it's just this great big panorama of absolutely nothing at all.
Yeah, that's exciting.
But
thanks,
it's
kind
of cool to see, you know, because you don't see distance in New York City but like that. Well, you do. Most people don't. And so it was getting dark. We had to bring her back to the hospital, and I see a guy giving hot air balloon rides on the road, and I do a U-turn, and I figure, as scared as I am of heights, and I'm terrified of them, we got to give Gussie some kind of special something, you know?
Like a memory
of seeing you vomit,
and just having a heart attack because you're afraid of heights?
Being thrown off the basket and everything. So I run up to the guy, and he says, no, it's dusk now. We can't go up, you know.
Okay.
And so it was a nice day, and we felt good about everything. And back in New York City, you know, we went back, and you know, worrying if place was going to be really helpful. And then, want to hear the other supernatural thing?
Well, yeah, because I mean, the whole thing about the balloon.
I can remember what I've told you in real life and what I'm telling you now.
Yeah, that's all right, because the balloon is connected to another kind of like sign that you
see. Well, the first thing that happened after that, we get back. And my friend and I walk down the street. We have dinner every one day a week and try to see terrible entertainment.
Who's your friend?
Paul Schaefer.
Just dropping names.
Piano player extraordinaire and shtick-tician. And my best friend, 40 years.
Wow, you hang out with Paul Schaefer from the
Letterman
Show.
I look at it like Paul hangs out
with you, okay.
No, I sure do. He's a great guy.
He is amazing.
And we're on one of these things, you know, we had dinner walking down Madison Avenue, and a homeless guy. I haven't told you this yet.
Homeless guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I see. You want me to tell the listeners?
Yes, tell the listeners, because that's kind of what the interview is about.
I don't understand radio. This new radio, this will never catch on.
Don't you worry about it. It's not radio.
I'd say
go
right to television.
Yes, exactly.
A homeless guy comes up, kind of nattily dressed for a homeless guy. And he says, you know, he had his hand out, and I'm so used to that in New York.
Sure.
You know, everybody has a paper cup.
Yeah.
And every block, right? And one time I put some change in a guy's cup and coffee splashed him. He was a construction worker on a break. He almost killed me. So I say, for some reason, I say, look, man, there's a deli on the end of the street. go in there, I'll buy anything you want, a sandwich, you know, anything you want. And usually they run away at that point because they really want money for exactly. drugs or alcohol. But no, this guy's all excited, you know, and he's placing his order with me as we walk towards the deli, like, but very specific. I want provolone, ham, but the provolone sliced lean, sliced
the
thin.
Bread's got to be crusty.
Crusty, and I love it. I would love it, you know, a Russian dressing, and a, you know. And my friend Paul leans over to him and goes, perhaps a lovely Merlot to go with that. So anyway, I take him in there, and the hot counter where they make this, whatever, they make the sandwiches closed, and he's disappointed. I said, well, look around. It's a deli. I'll buy you whatever you want. He says, look, man, just give me $3 for McDonald's. And I go to myself, I shouldn't make this guy my project because I got enough.
That's interesting.
I got though. Enough stuff yeah. to worry about. So I give him the $3. But instead of just leaving, like you would think,
sure.
his whole demeanor changed. His whole face changed.
Uh-huh.
He's looking at me like he's another person and says, God bless you, Tom.
What?
Yeah. And at no point had Paul and I ever said my first name.
Okay.
No, and Paul doesn't even call me Tom. He calls me stupid. No, he calls me he calls me Leo, like you. That's my nickname
was
Leo, like Leopold, yeah.
What? So this guy, I mean,
I don't know.
Do you think that this was angelic? Do you think that this was God? Do you think this was like a miracle?
Yes.
Wow.
I do.
And
I mean, it sounds arrogant to say that, like God would give me, a hack comedy writer, a miracle, but
well, why would you say that? That would be arrogant. I mean, I think it's pretty
well,
awesome.
Well, I mean, God, it's like you're
so
bragging.
You prayed for the first time in your life, and maybe God is answering your prayers.
Yeah, exactly.
This is kind of sounding a little pious, and I try to not make my show about piety, but this is kind of unbelievable.
Well, ice cream and piety. Yeah. That'll be their fourth segment of your show.
But, okay, so all of these are connected in
right.
for
so
one reason.
Because I was so shaken by it.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul was, too. And it would be one of those times when you wish you had your emergency pants. You know those times, Leo. Come on, you know.
I have them on right now, just in case.
I know. I'm wearing my Spanx. Did I say Spanx yet on the show?
Onesies. That's what your dad probably created, right? Onesies.
Yeah. Onesies. I think they're twosies. But I was shaken. I didn't even go after the guy. Partly because I didn't want to know. I didn't want to know one way or the other. I didn't want to know it wasn't kind of supernatural, and I didn't want to know for sure that it was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a very.
I mean,
point.
I kind of stayed.
So, what do you do with all of this now? Because then something has to give.
I came home and told Barbara. You know, she was.
She believed you.
How long can you fool a woman about who you really are? 25 years at the most.
At that moment, it was 25 years.
Yeah.
Okay. And then,
because we were still shaken from the desert guy.
Yeah, that's. But then what happens, because there's a big leap between you becoming, you know, a nominal believing Jew.
Yes.
To saying a prayer, and then Jesus on his birthday sends you a shepherd.
Oh, that's what
on
I forgot to say. It was Christmas morning, Jesus' birthday.
Yes, exactly.
And we're in the desert.
Yeah, no.
And.
But by the way, as a Catholic, I know that Christmas is Jesus' birthday, Tom. Just letting you know.
All right, but maybe you forgot. Everybody forgets something. You're a priest. You shouldn't forget it. But and his wife's name, maiden name was Shepherd.
Yeah, I mean,
and
all
Jesus
of that.
Had a flock. I mean,
sure.
We didn't really get it till like later, and kind of came in waves, you know. But anyway, I was really shaken by that kind of thing in the deli. All right, anyway, so. Do we have time for this? Or we have to go to commercial.
No,
going to commercial.
No commercial.
For Wendy's or something? All you can eat night?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a good title for a song.
It is. Okay. That's going to be my next interview, a Wendy's late night drive through worker. I got to find one of them, and that'll be
hysterical. Well, after me, that'll be the guest. You should have had him first.
Or her.
Or her.
So
absolutely.
So.
The women at Wendy's are fantastic. Next thing that happened was I'm watching news on TV.
Okay.
Fox Channel. And they're interviewing a young priest.
You watch Fox?
I do.
Okay.
So take me to conservative jail. My arms are out. Put the bracelets on me,
Rachel
baby.
Maddow would just, you know.
Look, he's a very attractive young fella.
Oh, my God.
But I don't like his politics. I mean, why? If you don't want to be teased about looking like a boy, then don't look like a boy. If it's that means that much to you. You know what I mean? Like, you see, I can imagine, like, my grandfather, if he was alive, going, accidentally watching Rachel Maddow go, now there's a good-looking young fella. Why don't you dress more like him? I don't want to go into it, Grandpa. But
I love it.
Did I go off track?
So you're watching Fox and...
Yeah, and I see that they're interviewing a young priest who has a book out called The Promise. It was Father Jonathan Morris, our mutual pal.
Absolutely.
And
he's good for TV.
As I said to him when I first met him, you look like the guy they'd hire to play you in a movie. You know?
No, he fits the part.
I'll take that guy. Well, that's the real guy.
So anyway, he's on there hawking his book.
Yeah, and about how one can find grace through suffering.
Sure.
Suffering I had down, grace I needed some help.
Sure, exactly.
So I bought his book, and it really was very helpful.
Wow.
Now, flash forward like a week, and Gussie's due back to come to New York.
Okay.
And we're anxious, happy but anxious. Oh, my God, I just hope something improved here. You know, cost enough. Damn place. Jeez. That was the entire money from Cheers. That was my entire season of Cheers. She spent it in the hospital. Yeah, that was 100 norms I had to
write. That's right.
And love doing, by the way. So I buy his book. It was very helpful.
Okay.
Now Gussie's coming back, and we're anxious. So I have this idea to call this psychic, Frank Andrews, that I had called 38 years before because a woman I was dating broke up with me, left me for a plumber.
So you consulted a psychic.
Then I hired to fix our toilet.
Yeah, okay.
Okay?
You are a weirdo.
Right? And so friends of mine said, I was just, you know, a mess, and my friend said, look, go see this psychic, Frank Andrews.
Okay.
And it might help you. And I go, you know, I don't need a psychic. I need a girlfriend and a plumber. That's what I need, you know. But I went, and he predicted my whole life. I mean, absolutely amazing.
So you believe in psychics?
I believe in this guy.
Okay.
This guy is for
I do
real.
Think that some people have this power.
Yeah, and he's a good guy.
How much does he charge? I'm kidding. Don't.
I know now that I can't go back. I can see him socially and kind of squeeze a little information out of him. I took him to dinner because now as a Catholic, I can't do two things. I can't go to a psychic and I can't kill myself.
Yeah.
And I was looking forward to
that. Wow. Is that what they taught you in RCIA? Is that it?
Well, I mean, it's self-induced suicide.
I would take them to dinner, and then when the check comes, just put like a bunch of cards there and be like, hey, what do you think about that? You know, and have them read your cards.
Yeah.
Is that what he does?
He does that. He does the tarot cards. So anyway, I thought I'd go see him.
Okay.
Because maybe we're so desperate for anything to hold on to.
And that's what people do.
About Gussie. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, we even got a fortune cookie that said, you are a lucky man one night.
Yeah.
And we were so desperate. But it was Barbara's cookie, but we still...
You claimed it?
I took it. Yeah, we were desperate.
Give me that. That's my cookie. I had to
take Barbara's thing. So I go to see him, and... he remembered me and everything, and I go, and he does the cards, and the first thing he says to me, now this is about 2 weeks after I was in Arizona, the very first thing he says is, never go on a hot air balloon ride.
What?
I swear.
So the guy in the hot air balloon says, you can't go,
right.
And maybe this is God protecting you because you are so klutzy, you probably would have fallen out of the basket.
Can you imagine the conversation in heaven? Lord, yeah, what is it? Tom Leopold's going to get in a hot air balloon. Oh, no.
And then this psychic, completely disconnected. I mean, this is in New York. You're back in New York City.
Completely disconnected. I hadn't seen him for 38 years.
I mean, did you change your underwear again after that meeting? I mean, did you kind of freak out?
Since all these things happen, I wear sauna pants. You know, just that's how bad it gets.
That's so crazy. And then,
well, listen to this part. First, that's what he says to
me.
But he didn't really think about any hope, anything about Gussie, really.
Sure.
So I was disappointed, but Barbara's waiting for me in his living room. When we go back, I pay him an exorbitant amount, and I go. I forgot that part. And we leave his townhouse. We're walking down the steps, and a town car, a black town car, pulls up. And out steps a handsome young priest.
What?
Not just any priest. And I also told him, you're so good looking. You look like... See, when I first saw him on TV, I didn't have my glasses on.
Uh-huh.
So I thought it was a remake of the Thornbirds. You know? Oh, it's not Richard Chamberlain. It's Father John. Yeah,
Well, first of all, he's coming out of a limo?
He's coming out of a limo. Turns out he had just been transferred. Well, I'll tell you, the psychic shared... Now I'm giving away the punchline, kind of. But the psychic shared a wall with a rectory of Old St. Pat's Cathedral.
Oh.
They were one wall apart.
Oh, my gosh.
With a rectory. So I go out and I say to Barbara, I say, that's the guy from my book. Because that morning his book was on my nightstand with his picture staring out. And she goes, no. And I go, Father Jonathan? And he looks up. it's him? Because I thought, in the book it said he was in the Vatican, he was in Italy. Yeah.
He's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's him.
And he comes over and he smiles and he shakes my hand, says hi to Barbara. And I said to him, and I don't know why I said it, do you think you might have time for coffee for me sometime? Have a cup of coffee with me. And it just came out of me. I don't really...
Food reference, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
So I just want to let you know.
Every coffee company gets a percentage. Because we didn't say what company.
Exactly.
So they each get a penny. And he said, I said, could you have a cup of coffee? He said, well, that depends. Did you pay full price for the book? Which I thought was a little bit... No, he didn't say that.
Then he passed out the collection basket
right,
to you.
Right. And so... I meet him. And then next, I go to have coffee with him. And
series of events.
Yeah.
From the guy in Arizona. Just a few of them.
Well, the main ones, yeah.
And maybe this is God saying that he is using your gifts and talents, because then eventually you become Catholic.
Because I'm not using them.
Exactly. And no one else is using them for you. But then you eventually become Catholic. But why? Yeah. I mean, is there anyone else in your family who's Catholic? I mean, you're a Jewish traditional...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Both my parents were Jewish. We were never bar mitzvahed because my parents didn't want to... They like to listen to show tunes on Saturday, And nothing came in front of that. As a matter of fact, my parents only joined a synagogue to audition for the musical shows. Really. They couldn't even wait to get to Temple Beth Am because there was an open call for My Fair Lady, And they both got parts. But it's weird to see my dad in a big yarmulke singing, "Get me to the church on time," while he's standing next to the Torah, Is that off the subject?
No. Well, it's kind of part of it because... your whole world has been turned upside down in a few different ways.
Right.
And yet you're able to kind of find humor in all of that. Is that kind of a default for you? And I mean, if you're experiencing struggles, do you kind of just tell yourself a joke to make yourself feel better? Or do you just, are you that guy who no one will take seriously because you're always mucking it up and yucking it up?
Boy, that's a lot of questions about
exactly.
me. No one's ever asked that many questions.
Well, this is shit-stocky, so this is what I do.
I got over people thinking that nothing I say is serious a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So. They don't think I take me seriously, but maybe, yeah. I mean, the people that I know
take
me
seriously.
Yeah, I mean, but nobody else is interested in me, so I don't know if they take me seriously or not.
But so you've actually taken these experiences. You eventually become Catholic.
Well, my conversation before I went to RCIA with Father Jonathan, on that first time I met him and we had coffee, I told him about all these things.
Yeah. Did he think you were crazy?
He said, and it's the first time nobody ever said this to me. He said, I don't forget the exact words, but he made it like God and Jesus, it's just a foregone conclusion. I mean, I never saw anybody who just talked about it like it.
Yeah, it's just
forget about it, man. Don't even bother with questioning that one. That's the simple one,
Sure. I would say the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's great to be able to relish in those quote-unquote miracles, but at the same time, you can't live your life for those things because those things may not happen again, but you have to learn from them eventually.
Yeah.
And what did you learn? Let me just ask you, from all of that, what did you learn? Because now you take this story out on the road with a show, like a one-man show. It's a comedy show, really. It's called A Comedy Writer Finds God. Yeah.
It's very funny, but it's my life and then how all these things happen and more of this story and so on.
And what did you get out of the moral of that story?
More of all those things happening?
Yeah.
Well, there's a supernatural reality for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I got out of it.
Absolutely.
And I've been absolutely fascinated by it and really love, it's just beginning, even 8 years in, to just begin to be able to have a relation and to do it right.
Yeah.
To want to be really good, not being very good, but trying, and to think of the angels and the saints and God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit.
There's
people right around me in
absolutely.
The room. And it's great when I can do that. It's great. Mostly you can do it in adoration. I like adoration.
Oh, my gosh.
Like the way I'm looking at you right now.
I mean, there's just so much about you. Obviously, I'm going to have you on another show so that we can hear the journey after you become Catholic.
Sure.
But you're a little bit of a minority these days, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that.
You mean
like
Catholic?
Being a Catholic in the entertainment industry?
Kind of a...
Not too many Jewish people convert to Catholicism.
Not in the comedy writing game, man. It's almost like they can kill you for that.
It probably would have done a number on your career. Do you think it had a negative effect?
That didn't. Being conservative hasn't... None of it had a thing on my career, really. But I found myself not telling people many, not just volunteering that for, not that I care.
Uh-huh.
I got over $1,400. I don't care if I ever work again. But I would go to parties after some people knew. Uh-huh. And I was happy to talk about it. You know, I was supposed to, right? They'd get me off in a corner, and I think, well, this is a drug deal. This is, I don't know what. They say, so I heard you converted to Catholicism. You really believe in God and all that? Huh. I go, yeah. And it's almost like they secretly want to. Because they look at me and I guess I don't look like the normal, I don't know,
person,
guy who becomes Catholic. I don't know. But it was almost like they wanted to know more, but they were timid about it.
Oh, I think people are very nervous to talk about faith, which is one of those subjects that is just...
I think people want to wait to see what everybody else does on that.
Wow, that is... Man, this is brilliant. There's
which
so much here I'm learning.
Which is what show business has become, sort of, too.
It really is. Let me ask about that. Before, obviously, we close, just a few more questions.
I thought
about
we closed.
Yeah, exactly. Is this thing
we
recording?
We never closed.
Just a few questions about the craft. You're funny. You actually teach people how to be funny?
Right.
You have courses that
you
teach?
Well, I mean...
Are they as expensive as the psychic guy?
I make just what the psychic makes, actually. I'm the comedian whisperer.
Okay. Yeah. Because some people are pretty boring. If I send them to you, would you help them?
Well, I always start from the fact that you can teach them how to mine their own funniness.
Well, tell me a technique that a person listening now can hold on to it.
The thing that's different, you know, I've been doing it for so long that I can't really stop.
Mm-hmm.
The machine is just built too big. You know, like the machine of like connecting things. Wouldn't it be funny if this? Wouldn't it be funny if that? Like I say to Barbara sometimes, hey, honey, is this funny? She goes, yeah, it's funny, but just stop. You know, just stop. But it's, you know, it's
so
I can't.
Your mind works that way?
Yeah, and then you over doing it so many things, you get faster, really.
Sure.
Not, you know.
And is that what you teach people how to do?
No, I teach them to bring their minds to what, like if they see somebody funny, something go down in the bus that's funny, like somebody sits on their hat or a cake or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how many cakes you've sat on in the bus. I've sat on quite a few.
That's why I have my underwear.
Before you put candles in your tux. Yeah. And you laugh at that. Most people just, that's it. They laugh at it, and it's gone.
Are you the guy sitting on the bus laughing at stuff and no one else is...
No. I don't want any of that. Bring attention to myself on the bus.
Okay.
I don't want anybody to hear I ride the bus.
So you tell these people to pay attention to all of these...
And bring it back to your conscious memory so that soon, if you keep doing that, you bring it in and memorize it, but start really observing how you're observing things.
Sure.
The things that make you laugh. None of us are so original that there won't be other people that don't laugh at it.
You know what? I think the reason why you can do this well...
Some people are bigger, could do it... You know, some people are going to be better at it like anything, but...
But I think you can do this well is because you have a Jewish tradition called Midrash, which is the ability to tell stories.
My dad was hilarious.
And I think that's a real gift that we need to teach our modern world. And let me just ask you about modern comedy. Is it changed? Is it different? Is it worse now? I mean, like, you're naming these comedy greats. They were hysterical. Now I kind of watch comedians, and they're just crass and gross. And maybe that's me being judgmental, but I'd love to hear your take as a professional.
Well, I think only the proportions have changed. There was always this amount of great stuff and that amount of bad stuff. But now there's so much stuff that there's bound to be a lot of bad stuff.
Okay.
Never as much good stuff, but that's how it's always been. It's just more venues to see bad stuff.
Wow.
Like, the funniest people... I mean, not everybody. I mean, I don't think... There's lots of really funny people I know that didn't become stars. I'm one of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm number one.
Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. I just think that's how it is, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. There is just 24-hour comedy channels.
Yeah,
and
how much can
in order for people to get on there, you have to almost be bombastic, even if you have no talent.
The Weather Channel has funnier stuff on it.
I agree. Yeah. So let me ask this before we bring it to a close. Again, I'm going to have you back on, and we have to hear
this
story.
No, I'm very busy, Leo.
Yeah. I'll get on the calendar. I'll talk to Barbara.
I'll have my calendarist call you.
So what I have to do is to get you back on and talk about from the moment you become Catholic until now, because you're doing amazing things, still working in your craft. That's crazy.
And then some,
that someone hired you. Wow.
How anyone ever hired me.
But really, as a priest, I just have to ask, say, before you were a Catholic, before you experienced these mystical things, what could I have done for you as a priest in your world, for a comedy writer, for comedians, for people in the entertainment industry? I would just love to hear what your opinion or answer could be. As a priest, what could I do to be a good priest for you?
Well, you know, I do teach a lot of comedy people, and I work with comics and so on. You know, sometimes I write jokes. You know, if you sit your butt in the chair long enough and you go out there whether you feel inspired or not, sometimes your talents will peek around the corner and go, look at him sitting there working on, maybe I'll join him.
Yeah.
I find that the times I'm inspired and the times I'm not, there's not a whole lot of difference because I just get myself there and do it.
Sure.
But sometimes what will happen, it's a wonderful thing when it happens, and it happens rarely, but I'll write a joke that there's no way I could have written.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it just
comes to
it comes, and I thank God. I say, thank you. I didn't think of it. Uh-huh. You know? It's just...
So is that what you're going to do, is pray for you to get
No, but I'm just
funny?
Saying that spiritual thing, it's a spiritual feeling. I mean, like feeling like God is here, or maybe Jesus is over there in that...
Sure.
That chair. That whatever color that chair is.
Brown, grayish.
I think it's quicksand brown. Yeah.
Synonym, we'll check it, we'll find out.
By the way, I used to write for Quicksand Brown. He's a wonderful, talented guy. But, I mean, it's kind of like that feeling of trusting that is... it's. Why should you trust that and not trust God? I mean, to me, it's like that's when I feel really connected. Like, I mean,
so that's what you want me to do, is help you to trust.
Well, to help people to it's.
But how does
trust their inspiration? Because it's not just a magical thing, but yet it is.
Okay.
And by inspiration, that could also lead you to God. I mean, those moments are like somebody just gave me, somebody up there, some great comedy writer up there just tossed me one.
Wow. You know, that's a. That's a pretty profound thought for me as a priest, to try to help people in the entertainment and even the comedy world, just to help them to be inspired by, I don't know, first of all, praying for them and kind of just making friends with them. But
inspiring them for your purpose, too, or their own good, to bring them into to know Christ.
When I was teaching seminary, I wanted to have a comedian or a comedy writer come and teach these guys how to have a sense of humor.
Oh, to the priests?
Well, future priests.
Future priests,
yeah.
Right.
Which is what... That's,
I'd love to do that.
Oh, I would love that, too. I would have to record that just to get some of these guys to lighten up a little bit without turning it into a shtick or a comedy show.
Be improper or...
But just to how to celebrate, how shall I say, the good news, the joy of the good news that we have. And that's exactly what I got in this show. And when I come back, ladies and gentlemen, I am going to share with you my carry-out order, what I learned from Tom Leopold, not only a great comedy writer and artist, but I'm just so proud to say it, a great friend.
Absolutely.
And so we are going to have you back on, but I'll be back with my carry-out order in just a moment.
Where's my check?
I'll shoot the shiitake with you and pay for your drink. That's what I'm going to do.
Fine.
I'll be right back. People know of my first book called Grace Before Meals, Recipes and Inspiration for Family Meals and Family Life. But did you know that I actually wrote a recipe book for couples in marriages? And you're probably thinking, but dude, you're a priest. What do you know about marriage? Well, I'll tell you. I know enough I didn't want to get married. But I can also tell you that God has a lot to say about marriage, because in this book, God and I are trying to get rid of anniversaries and replace them with monthiversaries, monthly dinner dates with inspired bite-sizable essays on what it means to find true love. If you want to get this book for your husband, your wife, for your fiance, or for your children who are going to be getting married, all you got to do is find Spicing Up Married Life at shop.fatherleofeeds.com. Again, the book is called Spicing Up Married Life, and you can find it at shop.fatherleofeeds.com. Wow, I hope you enjoyed that Shoot the Shiitake, that deep dish discussion with Tom Leopold. And now it's time for my carry out order. What do I take away from all of this? And listening to the show a few days later and reflecting on the amazing experience I had meeting Tom, and of course meeting some of his great comedy writing friends as well, because we kind of hung out in certain circles at times, and just to get to know him and his world, it is kind of amazing, and I feel kind of privileged. But more importantly, not just because I had some amazing laughs, and trust me, there were times when I would spit up my coffee through my nose because he would say something right in the middle of me trying to drink midstream. How rude is that? I mean, it's like a funny bone can truly be a weapon. And I got to be honest with you. Sometimes I think I wish I could be a little bit more funny too. I think I'm corny and I've got good one-liners and stuff like that. But at the same time, I would love to be able to stand up and just bring joy to people's world. In fact, when I do my retreats or even my convocations or my speeches, keynotes, whatever it is, like my Feed My Faith event, I have to admit, people laugh a lot more. They tell me they have never laughed so much in church. And I know that there's a big debate about whether or not you should even laugh in church, whether you should clap in church. But here's my experience. You know, like, I'm a spiritual father. That's what I am. My job is to bring good news to people. And we as a Catholic church are oftentimes criticized for being just a bunch of people who have to, you know, how shall I say, always tell people what not to do. A church of no's, a church of rules and regulations. And that certainly doesn't make anybody happy. But when I try to bring a little bit of good news, and truly, I'm not trying to be a comic or anything, even though some people said I should do stand-up comedy, and I would tell them, I am standing, ba-dum-bum, right? I would say, here's my motivation. You know, like when you're disciplining your kids and they're so cute and yet they're so mad at you because you disciplined them and you just got to tickle them. And then they're like, stop, I'm still mad at you. And then you tickle them more and they're like, stop it, I'm still mad. And you tickle them again and then they're your best friend. That's kind of what I think my job is as an itinerant preacher. As kind of a priest who is in different places all the time and meeting different people whose experience of church, I will have no idea what that is. And sometimes it might not be good. Sometimes it might just be mediocre and to a degree kind of an irrelevant experience of church. And by me just trying to tickle their funny bone, and trust me, folks, I'm not actually touching you, okay? Don't think I'm creepy. Gosh. But just trying to hit their funny bone, things get lightened up. And you know, the word levity comes from the word leaven. So when Jesus says you are, you know, to be leaven in society, we're supposed to uplift people. And one of the ways we do that is by inspiring good news. So here was my carryout order. Here's what I learned from Tom, and hopefully you did too. One thing that he told me was that to be good at anything is tremendously hard work. People have no idea. I mean, just watch American Idol and just see the interviews of people who think that they've got talent. There's so many people in this world who don't have talent, but they think they do. People are delusional if they think that everyone makes it big in the Hollywood industry. You've got to be kidding me. To do this work in the entertainment industry is hard, 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 hard work. Doesn't mean you have to have talent, but you got to work hard. And so I give credit to anyone who is in the entertainment industry, whether I like them or don't like them, I know that they are working hard to be out there and to perform. It's not an easy thing to do. And so Tom was saying that, you know, 90% of his work was just hard and difficult and challenging. And then there's this small percent where it just becomes, wow, this is what I'm called to do. It's just no different from an Olympiad who you do not see, except for maybe those 5 to 10 minutes when they are performing a routine that they have practiced literally for years, about 50 times a day. And then they just get out there and they do it, and it's that one moment in time. I feel like I need to get Whitney to sing that song. One moment in time. And may her soul rest in peace. But just the idea of being a performer, it is hard work. And so for anyone who wants to make it in the entertainment industry, and especially if you're Catholic, do not think you're going to get by just by praying. You got to also work hard. It's like you got to pray as if everything depended on God, but work as if everything depended on you. So that's one thing I learned, work. The other thing that I heard from Tom was that there is definitely a serious side to making people laugh. You know, he's not a comedian, although he has done stand-up comedy. I mean, I know that because I've been into shows. But I also know that as a comedy writer, you're in the back room, and what did he call it? Like the war room or something like that. It's just the padded room, really, where you just have to get a bunch of comedians, all from different walks of life for sure, and they are called to make a half an hour show funny, like a sitcom funny. And it takes weeks to write one show. This is amazing. And so there's got to be an understanding of a serious side to entertainment. And he said it very clearly. There is so much out there that not everything can be funny. You know, just recently we heard about the White House correspondent dinner and how there was a comedian. Super crass and disgusting. It just gets downhill more and more and more. And what we're called to do is to make sure that there are inspired comedians, that there are actually people out there who can actually bring joy and have it be good news. To have a comedian just to play to the lowest levels of sensibility, that doesn't make something funny. That just doesn't. It actually makes you kind of silly. Sure, you might make money on a circuit of just being gross and derogatory, but I don't know. I just don't always find that necessarily a form of comedy, but just a form of insulting people. Yeah, and sometimes insults can be funny. I will admit, and I have confessed, enjoying someone insulting someone whom I not like. I'll be the first to admit that. And so the serious side of comedy is making sure you know your craft. You know your craft, and he teaches us, Tom taught me, that it's all about staying connected to what inspires you. Being connected to what inspires you. And this idea of being connected and paying attention to the world around you and seeing if you can find some good news in all of that, that just requires you to have a real mastery of your senses. Are you paying attention in life? Are you able to bring good news and good, good news to yourself? So I tried to do that. I started driving around in traffic, you know, in the mid-Atlantic area near DC and in Baltimore. There's just so much traffic. It's kind of annoying. So I tried to put into practice what I learned from Tom. And you know what? It worked. It kind of worked. There were some people who cut me off and I started laughing about it too, because I just thought, you know, was that person rushing for it? Because maybe they had to go to the bathroom or something like that, and they were just ready to get there. Or, you know, so I just started to think of these scenarios as to why this person cut me off. And then I get to a stoplight, and there was a guy panhandling, and he had this sign, and I couldn't even read it. But what I noticed most importantly was that he had the biggest smile on his face as he was just kind of waving to people, asking for donations. And his smile, probably it was fake or maybe he was high, who knows? But that brought me joy. And so what Tom taught me was making sure that I am connected and paying attention to my surroundings and connecting it somehow to the source of good news. And that source of good news is Jesus. And so what I think Tom had done is he had brought to me, at least for this Shoot the Shiitake episode, a great amount of joy. And Mother Teresa of Calcutta, the saint who helped the poorest of the poor, actually gives a definition of joy, which is probably the best carry-out order of all. It is the meaning of joy, and she says it this way. Joy is J-O-Y, Jesus, others, you. Put God first, then you will not put others down. Isn't that what a lot of comedians do? They put others down just to get a good laugh. But if you put God first, others second, and you yourself last, you can not only bring a good laugh to people, you'll definitely bring them a lot of joy. You know, we're coming to a close here on Shoot the Shiitake, and I do hope that you enjoyed the show. And if you do, please sponsor us. Just a few dollars a day from every listener, a couple dollars each month, will really help us to continue the show. We're still starting it off new, and so we're developing our base, but I can tell you that thousands of people are listening. So if you want to advertise your business, we're going to even invite you to be a sponsor in another way, you know, as an advertiser for some of your product or your service, and we'll work with you on that. Please subscribe and please share this podcast with family and friends. And why? Because I think that my job as a host for this show is to bring to you some good news. A priest is willing to talk to a very unique group of people, a Jewish comedy writer who turned to a psychic for help, whose wall the psychic His office was butted up next to St. Patrick's Church in New York City, where he meets Father Jonathan Morris of Fox News Channel, and that's how his conversion starts. And then, of course, he winds up talking to a little Filipino priest with a cooking show. God certainly does have a sense of humor, and I hope that this show gave you a little laugh, but more importantly, a lot of good news, especially knowing that joy is very close to you if you understand what joy really means. Jesus, others, you. So between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, I hope you enjoyed yourself. But for now, we'll see you soon. And in the meantime, stay hungry. We hope you enjoyed this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. And if you enjoyed this show and want to hear more exclusive content, all you've got to do is be a premium sponsor. You can practice the three S's by subscribing, by sharing, and of course supporting us as a sponsor or as an advertiser, which gives you access to exclusive content, which we're going to be putting out real soon. So please help us to shoot the shiitake and become a sponsor, and you can get more amazing carryout orders in your life to get rid of all the bull shiitake that seems to always hit the fan. Thank you for listening, and God bless you.